You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. My first guests today are here from Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, so let's begin with some introductions. First up, Becca Sosa. Would you please introduce yourself?
Thanks so much. I'm Becca Sosa. I'm a STEAM program manager at Sea Alaska Heritage.
Michelle Martin, you're next. Would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, Michelle Martin, Claycock, and I am Michelle Martin, and that's my Tlingit name.
Nyake gonoschish. And Jay Zeller, last but not least.
Always last. My name is Jay Zeller. My Tlingit name is Dushkla, and I'm an art project coordinator at SHI.
Nyake kastatini gonoschish. You're all here today to talk about SHI's summer programs for Alaska Native students. Rebecca, coming back to you, would you just start us off by giving a little bit of background and overview about this program?
Sure. SHI is here, I think, to engage the community and all the communities. We have camps we're offering, programs for kids all through Southeast. We've even had kids from down south, I think, come up and be a part of these programs. And we're just so excited this summer to be back in person for a lot of this programming and really reconnect with kids, reconnect with families, and provide some awesome opportunities.
Is it all back in person this year, or will there be some virtual options?
There are some virtual options. Our Voices Camp, and I think we'll kind of get into that as we go through camp by camp, but it's a bit of a mix.
Great. And let's see. Oh, yes, I also wanted to ask all three of you, what's important about offering these opportunities for summer activities to Alaska Native students? Rebecca, we can start with you and then go around.
Oh, and I'm happy to hear everybody's responses on this. I just think these opportunities are so important for everybody, and especially coming out of the year that we've had, like I said before, that chance to reconnect, and a lot of these camps will have a chance to reconnect with elders and cultural specialists and just really great role models. And then I think reconnect with each other, to have kids together in that camp experience, really having fun and just enjoying life a little bit. And Michelle, can you add on to that?
Sure. Yes, I love teaching this camp. It's my favorite camp because it's really a time where teachers get to be creative and be able to just do the curriculum that they want to do and place-based and just a lot of integration with the core content that we teach in a school district and then integrating a lot of culture. So it's really exciting for me. My personal experience, I grew up in the village and I am now teaching in an urban city here in Juneau. So it's my way to stay connected to the village students and, you know, just so they know who I am and keeping that connection because the villages have a lot of strength. And when the kids come to Juneau, it's a lot of fun to be with them. But I'm really excited this year that we get to go to the villages and be with them on their land and really utilizing the resources that are right outside their door and learn STEAM activities and professions there. So I'm pretty excited. Keeping those connections with our rural kids is really important.
Yeah, okay. And Jay, what would you add?
So this is, I'm new to hosting or running things like this, but I vividly recall stuff like this from my own childhood. And it's something you don't think of as much as a kid, but as an adult, you definitely look back on more. And I would describe these kinds of camps and workshops and activities as like an enrichment of the soul that you definitely need in life. And especially for Native students, this connects to their culture, which especially in like the 21st century, it's not something that you'll find many other places. You kind of have to go looking for connections to your culture and how to keep it alive for yourself, how to keep it alive for future generations. And so that's why I like working on this stuff.
Michelle, coming back to you, you mentioned you're a camp instructor and teacher for Tlingit Culture, Language and Literacy Program. Tell me a little bit more about how you became involved, how long you've been doing it, and what sort of things come with your role?
Well, I grew up in the village of Huna, and that's where I went to school all my life and graduated. And then I moved to Cape, where my husband is from, and was involved in the school there, subbing or being a para or all kinds of positions. And then I came to Juneau to go back to school to become a teacher. And that's when my children got into TCLL back in 2002. And so I've been involved in the program off and on since, but now I'm permanent here, planting my roots in the fourth, fifth grade classroom. And in summertimes, I like to be able to connect back to my old stomping grounds, which I get to this year. I get to go to Huna and run camp, and it's so important to keep connected. And for me, what was really important is we have urban city settings and kids come here to Juneau and see that, and it's fun, but the villages also have their own strengths. There's a lot of subsistence we can go to. We run on village time, which I love. You know, if there's something to harvest, then you just get up and do it. And you don't have a set schedule, which is what I really like. And it's hard to run by a schedule in Juneau a lot of times, but we have to. So when we go to the villages, we're able to go on village time and harvest and do the things that come up and have a lot of the resources that can be hard to get in Juneau, such as subsistence and looking at what is really a profession over there that is related to STEAM. It's not just in Juneau. There's also a lot of hidden things for STEAM that happen in the villages too. And I'm looking forward to going out on the same boats and seeing what STEAM has to offer on the same boats and in the other parts of the community. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I was really curious about how the summer programs would fit around subsistence activities and harvest. Michelle, what are some of the courses that you look forward to teaching this summer in between harvest and other activities?
I harvest all the time, so I feel like I'm not teaching it, but we are. And so just exposing and being with kids to do it, I feel like that's so important right now, that we need to live off the land and take care of the land. And can you repeat your question again?
Oh, I was just wondering what courses you'll be teaching in between other activities.
So it sounds like what we're planning so far is looking at halibut fishing and how they do it on the seine boats. And there's a difference of how they seine for halibut, how they set skates for halibut, how we jig for halibut. So looking at those different various types of harvesting halibut. And while we're out there, we might as well harvest seaweed or other native foods that we do need and use that we could take home for the summer. So I'm looking forward to that, just seeing how STEAM can connect to what they do in the village, like on the same boat. So it doesn't sound like Saners are STEAM engineers, but they are. And it's in all parts of the same boat, not just let's get halibut. There's the mortar, there's the engine, there's the skiff and all kinds of things happening. So I'm really excited. That's what the plan sounds like so far. And I'm sure we'll throw in some things here and there as it approaches or presents itself to us. That's what I like about it too.
I love the blend of learning and hands-on and subsistence. What a great combination. Jay Zeller, you're an art project coordinator for SHI. What's your role in these summer programs?
Mostly my role has been coordinating, getting the applications set up and the registrations. Now that we are open for applications, I'm also the one to call if anybody has any problems signing up using the Camp Docs system for our camps, as well as I'll be the one registering people for the Voices camp specifically, the Voices on the Land storytelling camp. And so I'm the one reviewing the applications and doing that sort of thing. I'll also be in the classroom in the Voices camp and potentially one of the drivers. We're planning for kids who don't have rides for the camp times. Or don't have a way to get there. And it's a limited opportunity. We don't have like a whole lot of space, but we are planning on it. And in fact, I submitted my driver's license earlier today to put on so that I can drive the van and pick up students.
Now, there's a great list of classes on offer for these programs, from storytelling to basketball. So I wanted to start with the Northwest Coast Design class. I'm not really sure who is the best person to ask, but what can participants expect if they enroll in that one?
That'd be me. So Northwest Coast Design is a class for carving and oratory. It's Monday through Friday, noon to four, in person. It's a little hard to do remote for something like that, unfortunately. Supplies are provided, and it's also available for dual credits to high school, as well as three college credits for UAS for students in college. It's taught, let me see, where's my notes here? I don't have who's teaching it. I think, Becca, do you know who's teaching the Northwest Coast Art Design?
I think there's a couple different instructors. I know that Lyle James is involved in the oratory. And I know when I was reading the list in the description, I was just sort of oohing and aahing as every name came by and thinking, man, I wish it was for adults like most of our programs.
Yeah, we have different programs for adults. This one is for students entering grades 9 through 12.
That sounds like an incredible opportunity. Another one that caught my eye was the Voices of the Land Storytelling Intensive. What do students learn in this course?
That one is storytelling is something that is so vital to the culture. It's how the culture has survived all this long. Storytelling is the heart and soul of it. And the Voices on the Land Storytelling Intensive teaches you to amplify your voice through storytelling, drama skills, learning the elements of a story and tools of an actor, performing in a collaboration. You learn how to create like movies using apps on iPads and film production and interviewing, some stop motion animation. Use the different native languages, Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian, to tell stories about our land and about our people. There's a whole lot of like mixed hands-on activities and some independent stuff that you can do from home and for remote participants. There's a whole lot that goes into it, and I'm very excited to be part of it and to watch it grow, especially as an artist and a storyteller myself. And I'm very excited to see what these kids come up with. I heard really good things about it from last year, and I know everybody's very excited about it. Some of the instructors are people I've had the chance to interview in the virtual artist residence program, like Ed Littlefield, Vera Starbird, and Rosie Robards, Shelley Tunenberg, you know, Lily Hope. There's some really awesome people putting their time and effort into this.
That sounds great. And there's still more on the list. There's the Latsin Running Camp and the Latsin Hoop Camp for running and for basketball. There's Opening the Box STEAM Academy. Would anybody like to say more or highlight some of the things about those courses?
I think Michelle and I are both involved with the Opening the Box STEAM, and I think we can both talk pretty passionately about it. And we've had a great opportunity come for this summer where in the past, the Math and Culture Academy, the STEAM Academy that we had last year was virtual. Before that, it was based in Juneau when we brought people in. This year, rather than having kids travel, we decided to host the camp out in the village sites. So we have six different sites where we'll be having camp, and camps are designed for that site. So it's not a boxed camp where we're sending out a curriculum that's going to be the same at each site. We're really saying, like, let's tailor this and let kids experience work with adults in that village, Michelle was mentioning subsistence activities. I think each camp is going to be getting out on a boat. And each camp is really about opportunities that exist now and could exist in that community. So Wrangell, they're going to do a camping trip to the old town site. Sitka, they're going to do PSP testing and collect clams. In Juneau, Michelle, do you want to talk a little bit about the Juneau activities? I mean, I know you talked about the charter.
I talked about Hoonah. Sorry, I gravitated towards home. But I am doing the Juneau one with James White here, and I'm so excited. We just started our planning, and we're going to look at different professions of people who do STEAM in the community. And we have a long list. We're going to narrow it down, and we're going to spend a day and go to that field and just observe, because in our culture, we observe and we listen, and watching and doing experience is very hands-on. So we don't want to do so much computer online things. We're trying to minimize that and just be in the moment and just learn from these different STEAM engineers in our town and be able to experience it and go out on a boat too and be able to test out some of our tools that we'll make and do. So I'm really excited about that, just to be off the screen and out in the community and giving back to the community, keep supporting locals here in Juneau, which is very, very, very smart. I'm so excited for that.
And so those camps will be in Juneau, Sitka, Klawak, Angoon, Hoonah, and Wrangell. I think I got all six communities in there.
Wow. That is a lot to coordinate. Are you guys, getting enough sleep and staying hydrated and all that?
Talk to us in a couple of weeks. I think all the teachers are, they've learned to shoulder unbelievable loads this year. So I don't know that they even register when there's a lot to do anymore.
And I'll just add to that, it's really nice that we feel like we're supported as professional teachers in this camp. Because they don't say you have to do this curriculum. We can get creative, and we are treated professionally to be able to do the awesome things that we want to teach kids. That's what I appreciate the most about this camp, and why I always say, yes, I want to come back and teach, because we're trusted by SHI to integrate culture and with the content that we need to with students. And that's what I value the most about this camp.
Now, yesterday I spoke with Yehliadi David Shakely Early about culturally responsive education, and it seems as if these programs are excellent examples of curricula that is rooted in that framework. Is that intentionally applied to the development of the coursework? You're all nodding.
I would say yes. That's one of the things that I think SHI definitely prides itself on most is connecting the culture to as much as we can to just about anything that we can, and especially giving opportunities to continue knowledge, to make it more accessible, to make it more diverse, and as many opportunities as we can, as many communities as we can, and something that I think we're always constantly, okay, now, we're not just satisfied in what we're doing. We're like, okay, how can we do this more? What else can we provide? And it's something that we go back to like every week. Okay, cool, that we have these events going on. Let's look to the next one. We're always moving.
Anything to add? Go ahead.
I think there's some other key elements you'll see across all the camps. Language will be integrated into all of the camps, and the cultural values that are held by the organization and really pulled from all the cultures in Southeast are an integral part of everything that we're doing. And I think, like Jay said, just constantly striving to share more and do more.
Well, we've talked so much about these classes. It's so interesting to me to hear all about it, but I think we should probably talk about how you can sign up and get registered and how our listeners can participate or how their children can participate. Would somebody like to share some of the details about that?
So for the Camp Doc system, we have registration link that is on our flyers, and I'm pretty sure on our social media. But it's also app.campdoc.com/register/SeeAlaska. And what you do for that is then, if you are a returning participant, if you used our Camp Doc system that we had for the camps last year, it makes things a lot easier. But if you're a new participant, then you have to click new participant option, and then you can in the email box type in your email in order to confirm it. You create a password, click continue, and then there's some instructions going on how to create a participant profile. The cool thing about this system is that one adult can use the same login to create multiple participant profiles for all of their children, which is one of the reasons why we work with the Camp Doc system, is to make this streamline it for families. And also, once you have that set up, you can choose specific programs that we have on offer and fill out the information for specific applications or for specific camps. So you can sign up for multiple camps all at once, which is also very, very nice. And then once you finish all the information, and it'll tell you as you go what percentage you have that you filled out, from 0 to 100%. And then it also automatically saves, which is really, really nice. And then once you've done all that, and then it gets to me, and then I go through it and go through the applications, and depending on eligibility or room or that kind of stuff, I decide who is approved, and then goes into the registration phase, where then the parent gets an email and says, okay, you're approved now. We need the rest of your information. Here's what you'll need. Here's the details for what programs you've been approved for. And then it's the same thing. You have a percentage, and it'll tell you how much you have left to fill out. And then there's a submit button.
Well, all that sounds pretty straightforward. How many students do you think will be participating in all the programs this year?
It depends from camp to camp. There are, and especially depending on if it's mixed or if it's just in person or remote. So the numbers will vary. We have a max amount, but then, you know, we might not reach that max amount. But for the camps, let me see. There is roughly, for at least the camps that I'm running, about 40 expected per camp. That's how much we're preparing for. Some of them are only up to like 25. And that's also, we have that limit also because you have to factor in how much staff and COVID precautions and how many people are allowed to be in a space at any one time. And make sure everybody's safe. And we've taken those numbers into account a lot, and we've been like, okay, who's essential? Who, you know, that sort of thing. How can we make sure that everybody stays safe regardless of the state of the COVID level at that time and in that location?
And with that, you know, knowing that some of the camps have a lower capacity than they might have in the past, and Jay kind of described that registration system, encourage parents just go in and do sign up, because it's two steps. And just getting in that application, there's still that step to actually get registered and be fully in camp. And we do expect a lot of these camps to fill up. So the sooner you can get your name in, I think the more likely you'll have that spot.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Gunos Chisht, all three of you, for speaking with me today, for sharing all that terrific information, and for all of the effort you've made with your colleagues to coordinate these wonderful programs for youth this summer. Michelle Martin, Becca Sosa, and Jay Zeller, all from SeeAlaska Heritage Institute. Is there anything else that anybody would like to add before we say goodbye today? Oh, all shaking their
thank
heads.
You for having us. Gunos Chisht.
Gunos Chisht. All right. Thanks so much for being with me today, and lots of luck, and have a great time this summer. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, And my next guest today is here to talk about running for local office. Welcome, Kirsha Hughes Scandies, president for the League of Women Voters. Hello, Kirsha.
Hello, Shelley. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's so good to see you. Let's start off with a little bit of info about League of Women Voters. What was the last year or so like for the organization? How did you have to adjust for the effects of the pandemic?
A lot of Zoom, of course. Usually our board meetings, you know, we meet monthly, and it's usually like a room at the library, and instead everything went online. And it's kind of been cool because it really makes it easier for folks to attend who maybe for logistical reasons, you know, can't get out to the valley in time, or, you know, find parking downtown if we're meeting downtown. So it's been really helpful.
Yeah, there's a little bit of good about meeting virtual or being on the virtual platform, some of the time at least.
Focusing on the positive.
Well, today you're here to talk about the upcoming workshop, How to Run for Local Office. The League has put on several of these over the years. What's important about putting on this workshop?
I think the biggest benefit of this workshop is that it opens up the playing field to more people in our community. So you don't have to, you know, already know people who are connected to, you know, city government or the school board. You can be anybody, and this workshop will help give you the tools to know what you need to do, when you need to do it, and, you know, some tips and strategies to help you avoid, you know, pitfalls along the way. So, yeah, the idea is that it gets even more people involved in the process.
Does that fit in with the mission of the organization?
Oh, indeed. Yes. The League of Women Voters, you know, at every level, it's all about creating a more informed and engaged, you know, body of voters and getting the vote turned out. And so this just really dovetails nicely with everything that we try to do.
Now, is this workshop tailored to women?
It is not. Yeah. So a very understandable point of confusion since it's in the name, but the League of Women Voters is actually for everybody. It just forms, you know, as a response to suffrage. So it's our origin, but everybody's welcome, and the workshop is for everybody, and we will have men and women on the panels.
Oh, great. Well, that's a nice segue into the details of the workshop. First of all, when and where is it taking place?
So it's taking place online. It'll be on Zoom, and it's on Saturday, June 12th, so a few weeks from now. And the whole thing's going to be virtual. This will be the second time that we're doing it online, and I'll be curious to see if everybody has Zoom fatigue yet, because last year was, you know, we had to do it online. Obviously, we were right in the throes of the shutdowns, and we actually had higher turnout than we had previously. Hmm. So, and part of that probably is the fact that traditionally we held it in the chambers downtown in City Hall. And so, you know, there's only so much street space, and you have to find somebody to watch the kids or whatever to get down there. So, you know, hopefully just being able to get on your iPad or your laptop or whatever and sign in, we'll see high enrollment again.
I hear what you're saying about Zoom fatigue, but I've found that if there's something that somebody, well, me, really wants to watch or be a part of, yeah, I'll get over it and log on.
Yeah,
anyway.
Totally. Yeah. Yes.
So who are some of the folks that you're going to have on the panel for this one?
So we try and get a mix from both the assembly and the school board in terms of sitting officials. I cannot recall off the top of my head who has graciously agreed from the school board. From the assembly, I believe we're going to have Lauren Jones. I'm not sure if Wade Bryson is coming back. He was a real hit last year. And I think my sister, Alicia, who's Candies, is going to be participating on one of the panels. And then we also have folks from the city clerk's office who agree to come, as well as, you know, people who have otherwise worked either on campaigns or, you know, in various offices. I know some years we've had like representatives from APOC come talk about, you know, the real nitty gritty of the financial requirements. So it's a really good mix of people who are involved in the process.
Yeah. And along those lines, what are some of the items on the agenda for this workshop?
So, you know, we have people on to talk about the jobs themselves. So, you know, what you can kind of expect, and both what the limitations are, as well as, you know, what your scheduling commitment's going to look like, you know. And then we'll also go through the legal requirements, you know, what it takes to to, you know, to declare candidacy, all the paperwork, kind of bureaucratic part. We'll talk about, you know, any legal requirements, like I said, APOC filings, that kind of thing, the stuff that you legally have to do to be above the board. And then we'll also have a lot of tips about campaigning. So folks will talk about their experiences with campaigns. And, you know, a lot of people, I don't know if the answer is most, but I think it might be most people, you know, don't win their first election that they run in. So there's a lot that you learn to, you know, it's obviously you learn by doing, but that a lot of folks have, you know, tips of what did, and even more importantly, what did not work, or, you know, what to look out for. So
now, does politics ever come up in these workshops? I could see how a heated discussion might derail the day.
Yes. Yes. Fortunately, we stick mostly to the, you know, the topic at hand, which is really more about what it takes to do it. And there's just so much to talk about there that doesn't really get a chance to come up in the workshops that I've seen. I've attended several at this point. And, you know, other than, you know, you might have a stray remark here or there, but the process itself is nonpartisan, and that's certainly our goal. And as well, you know, people have, you know, strong political opinions, of course, like we live in a time of very strong political opinions, but regardless of that, these seats, you know, the municipal seats themselves are nonpartisan. So when you're running for the city assembly, there is no parentheses letter after your name. And likewise for school board, of course.
Now, you mentioned your sister. She's one of our assembly persons, and you've likely had a firsthand look at what that journey has been like for her, and even for you as a close family member. So from, you know, your personal perspective, what was eye-opening for you throughout that process?
Well, you know, it just cannot be overstated how busy, how many time commitments there are. We both, before she, you know, before it was ever really much of a twinkle in her eye, we both attended one of these How to Run for Local Office workshops because we saw it and we thought, well, that's interesting, you know, and kind of, you know, as soon as you start paying attention to stuff at the municipal level, you realize there's a lot going on, and this is, you know, our daily life more so than, you know, maybe who the senator is, you know, for the state. And so going to that workshop, it's funny, we got tons of good information and came away with, like, you know, handout after handout. And then a few years down the line, when she started, it was interesting how much of that was on our radar just because of the workshop, that we kind of knew, like, oh, you know, because I definitely, like, you know, tried to pitch in and help out wherever I could on her first campaign. And it is a lot of, you know, you're kind of Googling, like, wait, what are the requirements again? And, you know, is there any place else that we need to file something that we haven't filed? You know, so there's a lot of moving parts, I guess, is what I would say and what we learned.
So do you know what seats will be up for grabs in the next election cycle that maybe you're hoping to inspire some workshop attendees to run for?
Yeah. Right. Well, so the way that the assembly is designed, I believe there are 2 seats every municipal election. I think is how it works. Don't quote me. I'm not on it. and then I think it's similar for school board. I don't know if it's 1 or 2, but they, you know, they kind of stagger them. So each seat is for 3 years, but it's kind of rolling. And then that way it's nice. You have a little institutional wisdom and you have an opportunity for some fresh blood every year.
The How to Run for Local Office workshop is happening June 12th. That's a Saturday, I believe. Starts at 9 a.m. in the morning on Zoom. Where can we find out more info or register?
You can get info and register at junolwv.org/run.
Excellent. Well, Kirsha Hughes-Scandies, thanks so much. Is there anything else you want to add about the workshop or League of Women Voters before we start?
I want to encourage... Yeah, anybody who's remotely interested, there will be a ton of fascinating stuff for you. And I just want to thank the city clerks and the public libraries and the school district for co-sponsoring with us.
That's great. Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. I know a lot of work goes into this and a lot of organizations participate and a lot of people as well. So thanks to you and to everyone for doing what you do.
Yeah, thanks for letting me on to let folks know.
No problem, Kirsha. Good to speak with you. Lots of luck with the workshop and take care.
Thank you. See ya.
I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are here to talk about UAS admissions. Welcome, Brittany, is it Wisner?
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. UAS admissions counselor. Hi, Brittany. And also Cameron Okins, UAS student ambassador. Welcome, Cameron.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks, both of you, for being with me today. Cameron, let's start with you. What's a student ambassador, and what do you do as part of that role?
So student ambassador, we're pretty much like the first people that you talk to when you start your journey at UAS. We answer like inquiry calls and stuff like that. And we also give tours to prospective students. And then we also help with part of the application process. Like, you know, if you're having trouble getting contact with admissions, or if you're behind on your, qualifications or anything like that. So, yeah.
And what made you want to take on that job?
I've always liked talking with people. I've always been really personable with them, and helping students on their way to becoming a university student is, you know, a really important job.
What was your own experience like deciding to attend UAS and then navigating the application process?
When I started at UAS, I was originally in Juneau. I went to high school here. And so when I first started at UAS, it was actually in high school. One of the admissions team back then actually came to the school and talked with me and kind of like told me everything about it. I ended up actually joining the math program here and ended up really enjoying it.
So I've never been on a tour of UAS, though I've been to the campus many times. Can you give me one of the highlights that you like to point out?
I think one of the most amazing things at the university is always the library. It's really big, it's really beautiful, and I always tell people it's probably the best place in all of Juneau, really, to hang out and just relax.
Yeah, I do like the library there. Brittany, turning to you as an admissions counselor, how does having student ambassadors like Cameron help support you in your job?
Oh my gosh, our student ambassadors are so important. We have two amazing ambassadors right now. Kaylee couldn't be here today, but having Cameron and Kaylee and other ambassadors, it's so great because they can connect to students and their current students, so they can really give them the student perspective and tell their own personal stories and talk about what it's really like as a student. I'm not currently a student, although I was, and Cameron and Kaylee are just more hip and just way cooler than me. So to hear, you know, they're talking with students that are almost their peer age. So yeah, and they take care of a lot of calls. So when we have, you know, we're calling our students and doing document checks, like, hey, like, you're still missing a transcript, you need your scores. Cameron and Kaylee can do a lot of calls really fast. So they are a tremendous help. And it's always nice to get a tour from someone who is currently going to school there or living there. So yeah, they are amazing.
So Brittany, what do you encourage prospective students to consider before they make their final decision to choose a school?
Yeah, I think a big part of the decision process is just making sure it's the right fit for you. I know when I was, so I'm from Palmer originally, and my big dream was to get out of Alaska, and I wanted to go somewhere warm and a huge school. And that was just like my total college dream, was to get out of Alaska and go somewhere huge. But when I took a tour of UAS, I kind of learned some things about myself, about like what would really be a good fit for me, like a small campus size and actually knowing my professors and having the program that I wanted, and having it offered in a place that I had never been before. So that was still exciting to me. So I think students, just determining the different ways it could be a good fit for you. For me, another big part of why it was a good fit for me was just financially. I had the Alaska Performance Scholarship and the UA Scholars Award. So that, I was like, I guess I am a good fit there. I have a lot of money to go here. So, yeah.
Always a factor to consider. Cameron, would you add anything to that?
Not really. I mean, like Brittany was saying, it's a really affordable college. And I think that's also one of the big reasons I came here, is because for such a small and affordable college, you really don't expect to get as much as you do here.
So after a student makes the choice to come to UAS, what are some of the most frequently asked questions that come up as they navigate the admissions process?
Yeah, some of the big questions we get are, Just yeah, all about the next steps. Right now, students who have applied, they're like, well, what's next? Like I think a lot of students have just been waiting to graduate high school, which totally makes sense. You know, you have like prom to think about and online classes and just all these other things. But right now they're like, oh, okay, so am I coming? Am I in? Like, what's next? So yeah, those are some of the big questions. And right now the big message to students is that it's definitely not too late to apply or even start, you know, start your process of coming to UAS. It's not too late. That's another big question I get. I know decision day, National Decision Day is May 1st. So a lot of students think like, oh, I had to make a decision by May 1st and I didn't, but it's awesome if you've made your decision by May 1st, but obviously our application is open all summer. It doesn't close till August 15th. So yeah, our big next steps right now for students are you can apply and you can sign up for classes even too. So even some of the high schoolers that are just finishing or just wrapping up their last weeks of school have already set up their fall schedules, which is really cool.
All right. Yeah, well, that's another good thing about attending a small school is it seems like if you miss a deadline or if you need some help, you can at least ask someone. And I'm sure that you all do as much as you can to help a student get what they need.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely been interesting during these COVID times, but normally we come to the high schools and we do like a big we call it enrollment day. Some students probably remember seeing us there, but yeah, definitely easy to find who has the right answers for you. And if we don't have the answers, we can find the person who does. So.
Great. Well, Brittany and Cameron, thanks so much for speaking with me today. Is there anything that you want to share right now with our listeners about what UAS students should be thinking about if they plan on attending the next semester?
Yeah, definitely thinking about getting your application in. That's a big one. So definitely make sure you get your application in. They're due August 15th, although we obviously really encourage students to get it in earlier. Registration is open, so you can already pick out your classes, you can build your whole fall schedule, and we really recommend students do that before like early August, so you can order your textbooks in time for classes to start on August 23rd. And yeah, our housing application is open too, so even if you're in Juneau and you know you want to move to a different part of Juneau and live on campus, that's still open. So very open to our new students. We have lots of staff ready to help you get you on your way.
Cameron, would you add anything to that?
Not really. I think Brittany said it all. Just there's still definitely time to apply. I think anyone that's still out there looking should definitely look into UAS.
All right. Well, thanks both of you for speaking with me today. Where should folks go to find out more information? What's the best place?
Yeah, they can go to our website, uas.alaska.edu. You can find our application there. You can find everything there. You can even find the tour request if you want to take a tour this summer. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, both of you. And I hope you have a great summer and are staying busy and, you know, having fun until fall.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Mm-hmm. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
If you're thinking about running for office for the first time, up next we've got candidate training information from the Juneau League of Women Voters.